Welcome to It's Who You Know, the podcast, bridging the gap between Jewish leaders and those who follow them. Gain insight from Jewish professionals who make the decisions that influence your Jewish world.
Welcome to It's Who You Know, the podcast. This is Michelle W. Malkin, your host, and I'm so excited for our guest today. Beth Gansky will be joining us, who I have worked with now for about 6 or 7 months as an executive coach through Leading Edge's Leading Executives program. And it's been a wonderful experience, and she has been very encouraging for me to restart this program almost from the beginning since we started to get to know each other. And, you know, she said to me, sounds like something you really enjoy doing. I said, it was something I really enjoy doing. And she said, why can't you do that again? And I said, I don't know. Why can't I do that again? And so I figured it was only fitting to have her be one of my first new conversations that I'm having in this relaunch. And, you know, just hear from her what her experience is like and share with all of you what my experience has been like having her as a coach. So welcome, Beth. I'd love for you to just start with, you know, your career trajectory and how you got into this work.
Great. Hi, Michelle. I'm so happy to be here. And I'm also just so happy you're doing this. So right now I am a leadership. I really refer to myself as a leadership coach, executive coach. And I've been working in this area of really nonprofit leadership for the last almost 30 years in various roles. And it was about, I guess, 2008. So that makes it almost 15 years ago. I made a decision to really focus on coaching. I had been leading a nonprofit in Baltimore, where I live. I was leading the Hillels of Greater Baltimore. And at that time, we were a regional structure and we decentralized to become campus-based. So it opened up really a lot of space for me to think about what is it that I really love doing. And I decided it was just working with people to help them be the best they could do in leading organizations. And as a coach, you get to really, how I position myself by working with a lot of new professionals and then a lot of executives. For when I work with executives, I feel like there's the trickle down effect. So I'm working with them, but we're also very much impacting their organization. So back in 2008, I went back to school and I got certified as a leadership coach at Georgetown. And it was a total transformational experience because as you went through the program, you were coached. And it just, you know, wow, was that pause that I needed at that time in my life to do a deep dive into what I really wanted to do and to work through some things and really reassess my values at that time and decide how I wanted to lead and how I wanted to be with people. So that was a real turning point for me. Since then, I've gone on to lead one other nonprofit in which we trained lay leaders, volunteer leaders in the Jewish world in Baltimore who were going to become presidents of their organization. So it gave me a chance to do leading in cohorts and really lean into my one-to-one coaching. So that's really how I got to where I am right now.
That's awesome. Now, do you still have a coach?
I have friends who are coaches.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, that works.
Right. But we literally put on that hat when we will say to each other, I really need a coaching conversation. So I don't have a consistent coach, but I have 2 to 3 people who are coaches who I go to when as needed.
That's awesome. And how many overall have you worked with in terms of professionals and how many are you working with right now?
Wow. Overall, that's a great question. Probably hundreds. And right now I am working with people through 3 different organizations. So I'm one of the coaches on a coaching team. And so I'm working through Leading Edge. I'm on their coaching team. Hillel has a program called Accelerate, which is on the professional side for people who are on the talent bench to become a director. Mm. And then I'm also working here in town through Na'ala in Baltimore. It's the Hub for Leadership Learning. I'm also working with lay leaders there who are becoming presidents of organizations. So right now I'm coaching about 12 to 15 people. And I'm leading a president's circle of synagogue presidents who meet in my living room every 6 weeks or so just to do continued learning and support and peer consultation. And I'm also training a group of young professionals here in Baltimore for the year on a monthly basis.
I had no idea I'm like, I'm special. You're my coach. That's lovely. But here I'm like just one of many. And if I was ever going to, select a very executive seasoned coach to talk with, I suppose that you're definitely it. So lucky me that I got to work with you.
I want all my clients, everyone who I coach, to feel like they're the one.
Yes.
It's all about them when we're in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll go a little more globally a little later. I kind of want to focus a little bit on sort of that individual relationship. So for me, I had been in this role as executive director since 2019, got my feet wet and then pandemic. And so, even in that, this role in a lot of ways is, I want to say lonely, I want to say isolating, but it's really not, it's just unique, right? You are the person who is leading your staff and, like myself, but unlike others, I have a rabbi who's a power sharing partner, but most don't, and your board chair is kind of that power sharing partner on the volunteer side. And so when I sort of reached out to this program with Leading Edge, I didn't really think much about that impact, right? I'm really involved with executives in synagogues locally and then on the national level as well, going to their conferences and their learning sessions. And so that was really the place where I felt less alone and able to share. I didn't quite realize that individual conversations with a person about the stuff, right? Not just these sort of, I have to decide whether I want to say shit on my program or not. Shooting the shit, I guess that's not so bad. with your friends at a bar during a conference, right, is one thing. But really developing a relationship in which somebody, your individual success is their goal and mirroring back to you stuff that you might not have thought about previously. So before I launch into myself personally, I wanted to hear from you in terms of what are the sort of themes you see? What are the things that come out in these people from when they initially start talking to you and say that it's a thing or a reason that they've come to talk to you? And then where it actually ends up, or, maybe when you close out a relationship. Now, ours is forcibly closed because, it's through a particular program that's sunsetted. It doesn't mean that our, relationship can't continue past that. But I'm assuming that you have some that are more limited engagements and some that are obviously much longer engagement. So I'm just curious from your perspective, what does that trajectory for somebody normally look like? Or is it, different for everybody?
I think it's absolutely different for everybody. I have some people who, as you said, it's a limited engagement. I have four coaching sessions with them, right? I have someone who I'm working with 4 years later. I think one of the things, just listening to what you just said, Michelle, is leadership, in my opinion, is a shared activity. And it is. It's very lonely sometimes at the top as an ED. It's like, who do you really talk to on an ongoing basis about the challenges? And so if a coach could play that role for some executives, that's fabulous because it could be very lonely. I'm one of those coaches who really tries to help my clients say, what is it that I'm really trying to accomplish? What are my goals through this coaching? And for some people, it could just be, I need someone to be in conversation with. Mm-hmm. And if that's what they need, that's what they need. I very much, I feel that I am on the journey along with my peeps, so what they need is how I show up. Some people might say, I actually need help in this specific area. Perhaps it's fundraising, working with my board, community relations. And I'll say to them, well, I could take off my coaching hat and put on a consulting hat because I probably have a little experience in that area that I'm happy to share. But coaching is very much working with the person to help them see what opportunities and possibilities are ahead. So I try as a coach to be in the curious place of, deciding what we want to work on. And I ask everyone who I coach to fill out a complete coaching prep form ahead of before we meet. So that way I know they will already have thought of how are we going to spend our hour together? Mm-hmm. What's most important? What am I looking to focus on? Because I ask permission to hold the people I coach accountable. Say, is this something I could, are you ready to commit to doing this? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people need that because they know they're going to come back 2 or 3 weeks later. And I'll say, so what's going on with that? Mm-hmm. how did that work out? And that's really helpful for some folks. As I said, I walk the path with people. And you never know what comes up. You know, some of the questions I like to ask is, if someone is talking about a difficult situation, I'll say, well, let's think back to the past. When were you in a similar situation that actually worked out? And how did that work out? You know, where have you found success in this in the past? So executives are incredibly busy people, and they just don't take the time out for some of that thought leadership and the reflection. And to have that hour of sitting in just looking at the work and kind of getting up there and saying, okay, let me see from the balcony, here's a whole different view.
Right.
So I try to invite people up to the balcony and sometimes get out of the weeds to look at the bigger picture and the impact it's having on their organization.
Right. Yeah, that was a favorite part of my meeting with us today, is I didn't have to fill out my coaching form. I was like, awesome, I get to talk to her. I had no homework. But really, I mean, it's even that piece of it. And, you know, for me, it happened to be a particularly difficult situation that I didn't expect it, obviously, when we started our relationship. But even just writing those, because it was really like, oh crap, I got to get this to Beth like night before 11 o'clock. I was like, I got to do this. And I said this to you many times, like, wow, it was really therapeutic just to kind of get out of my mind the what's been going on. What do I want to talk about? Want something great to share? I know one of your big things is gratitude. What are you really grateful for? And so, you know, something about journaling that I've always kind of tripped up with would be like, meh, like, not that's a waste of time, but, you know, you're accountable, right? I've got a meeting with you. You've asked for this form. If I'm a true professional, I'm going to do the work that you're asking me to do. And the benefit of our conversations aren't just in the conversations, right? Is that pre-work, that thinking that you know, obviously look at and read, and you pull your conclusions from that to figure out what to talk about. And so when I first started the program with Leading Edge, I just signed a new 4-year contract with my current position. And, you know, my purpose in all this was like, okay, I've got these 4 years. I know whatever my next step is going to be, assuming that there is a next step and I don't sign a new contract after those 4 years. You know, what do I need to be doing, right? I'm not one to sit still for long. And I understand that, especially within the Jewish community, like, you got to grow your skills and keep your network fresh and, you know, keep being out there a little bit, although this is far more of a selfish endeavor for me than it is a networking one, this particular podcast. And then what actually happened within our conversations, I don't know how many of your clients cry on your sessions with you, but really
lots of them.
Excellent. Then you realize that, like, you know, check, I finally got them to cry. So we're doing something right. But it's, you know, there's kind of a lot of buzz around right now about vulnerability and, you know, that sense that, you know, it's okay to be vulnerable, but also who are you vulnerable with and why are you vulnerable? And, you know, as a woman in this position, I have found that crying, you know, has shown people that I care, which is unfortunate, right? That there's kind of, for me, this sort of, you know, negative connotation that, you know, me crying and being emotional in that way is not a way I want to show up. It's not, you know, for me, right? But in our personal, you know, sort of conversation and saying, what's so bad about being this vulnerable? What are you, you know, what are you accomplishing by doing this? And, you know, it's also, you know, I had received feedback in this last few months that, you know, if I were to say I'm sad, or I say this is really upsetting to me, my face doesn't quite say this is really upsetting to me. And so it's hard to believe that I actually feel what I'm, you know, what I'm saying, regardless of what I'm feeling inside, because it doesn't look like I'm, you know, sad, right? You know, a few weeks ago when I was screaming my face off, I was like, is this the emotion you were looking for me to have? But within our conversation, with our context, you know, you're able to get to those few layers deeper to say, maybe you don't want to be vulnerable with everybody else around you as you're trying to show up in this place of strength and confidence and accountability and leadership. But with me, you know, with your coach, like, let's dig deep in there. And the particular conversation I'm talking about with us was, sharing information around my childhood, right? So I did not have wealthy parents. I was very lucky to have, you know, wealthier grandparents that supported my Jewish education and camping and those things that my parents weren't able to pay for. And so, you know, kind of being vulnerable about that as my history and as, you know, it not being like, well, Michelle's got a narcissistic mom, so of course she'd act that way, right? You know, trying to say, well, maybe that's not necessarily the case. And so, you know, my point of vulnerability with you was, you know, you said to me, you know, when are you going to be able to embrace that as part of who you are and not something that you're trying to run or hide from? And so, you know, I wonder, you know, how many times do you see people not be able to take those walls down? And how many times are people able to take those walls down? And do you see those walls coming down, actually improve their work, make them better in their job, be able to be more vulnerable with the people around them, other than telling whoever wants to listen that, you know, anything about my past, and I don't know if my mom's listening, but sorry, Mom. But it's interesting because you're not in a vulnerable, you know, professional position. You're not, and you're expected to be the strength. And, you know, where is that value of being a professional coach in pulling out the vulnerabilities so that they can come off more human, come off more, you know, flawed? I mean, I don't know what that it kind of impacts the day-to-day work.
Yeah. Great comments and thoughts. Wow. There's so many things to have to respond to that. First, I'm just going to say, like, you wrote the most amazing coaching prep forms. I love how you wrote them. I always felt like I am right there with her. I know where we're going. And I think that, you know, as a coach, certainly through my training and my practices, you coach the whole person, right? That's why I take the time to say, tell me about your family. Tell me about what you do outside of work, because I want to always engage with the whole person. And many times I'll share things about myself because it's just the human connection. You know, we talked a lot about at the beginning about creating the sacred space of coaching and having it be a safe space. And hopefully, you know, as I build relationships with who I'm coaching, allowing them to be vulnerable, because that's hard. So yes, some people it's easier because to talk about those things. And some people I know it's going to take longer maybe for them to trust me or trust even themselves to be able to go there. Because there's not that many people in your life who said, wait a minute, can we connect a couple of things that happened, you know, maybe in your childhood or the more, or, you know, your young age to where you are now? Like, what are those things that maybe are holding that you hold or perhaps are holding you back? Right. Because coaching is really being able to do some breakthroughs of who you are as a professional, who you are as an executive, because that all impacts the culture, the environment, and the organization that you're helping to lead.
Right.
So I feel that those are very connected. And I look for places that, you know, that could come up naturally. And I think also just holding the space, like I know when I'm meeting with folks who I coach, like this is a real sensitive place for them. This is hard. And I might ask some questions but I let them take the lead. And I also want to give them the space to really sometimes connect those dots that haven't always been connected, or to get to the point of feeling confident and competent about themselves to say, I can own that piece of me that I've really kind of kept away for a bit, because it actually does impact who I am and how I lead.
Right.
I think there's a lot. You know, so many people are talking about authenticity these days, right? And to show it with empathy. But sometimes we have to do that for ourselves first, you know, and really say, well, what's most important to me? You know, what are the values that I'm leading with? How am I doing that in this role, this very complex role of an ED of a synagogue where there's so many different stakeholders? But it's like, how are you the same Michelle in every situation that you come into contact with?
Yeah. And one thing that we developed together, was a leadership philosophy. So there was a 360 review that was part of this program. And it wasn't the most glaring thing, but, you know, we kind of laughed about it because you do a self-assessment. And I given myself a pretty low score on, you know, leading with a clear leadership philosophy, something like that. And I was like, you were like, why did you give yourself such a low score? And I got like a 4.7. It was like on everyone else's response, it was really, really high. And I'm like, a clear leadership philosophy? Like, I don't have a clear leadership philosophy. I don't know. I'm just me, right? And so we developed, you know, a clear leadership philosophy of saying, these are my values. This is how it shows up. This is how you can expect to interact with me. And not on a more granular level, but something a little more broad that I felt sort of very proud of that I shared with my staff and my executive committee to say, does this sound right? Is this what you all see that I can't see that I'd like to put down on paper? But that's, you know, something that, you know, is just kind of inherent in the way that somebody might lead that isn't necessarily articulated. Right. So I want to see if there's anything else on my, oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I said, I think that's something that's really important for coaches to do is to say like, let's really articulate some of these things because there's a real difference between saying, yeah, I kind of know how I lead. The people have told me that, but to really own it and to write it and to share it, that's a whole different level.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah. So was there anything else from what I had said previously about vulnerability? It seemed like you had like a few notes that I want to make sure I don't.
Yeah.
Don't,
I mean, you know, one thing I just want to make clear is like coaching is definitely not therapy.
Therapy
is a whole different ballgame.
Yes.
But coaching is very much about, you know, I think great coaches ask great questions, right? Because, and even when someone's done, I don't know if you remember, I'll sometimes say, can you tell me a little more about one? You know, so then it's like feeling, you know, that orange back to say, oh, here's kind of where this started. You know, so you talked about how maybe the video doesn't match the audio, you know, and how some people are like, okay, like, when did you have to feel like self-protected? When did you have to show up in a way that, you know, certainly as a woman that you're like, you know, I can't show my emotions. Crying is not a sign of strength. Like, so kind of unpack, well, where did that come from? Like, why are you going under that assumption? Like, who says that?
But, I mean, but at the same time, you know, being frustrated that you cry and then someone says, you know, oh, I didn't actually realize that you cared so much. Yeah. Until you cry and you're like, ugh, how do I cry without crying? And, you know, in any kind of way that you're showing strength. And these are, I mean, and I can only speak for myself. I presume that I'm not the only one that has these, you know, frustrations in these particular positions, like as a woman or not as a woman. Right. I don't know if, you know, a man in this position gets upset at an employee for doing something, but doesn't get that upset. So the employee keeps doing it because they're like, well, he's angry, but he wasn't really angry. Like, you know, it's all that sort of balance. And you're talking about, you know, empathy for yourself, right? As a leader, I'm, you know, pushing my employees to take the time off that they need, sitting with them if I know that there's something wrong, making sure they have the right feedback. Like, I'm so attuned. And that, again, whether that's a male or female attribute of leading or just in general, so attuned to the happiness and well-being of my staff and that they're in a good place and they're doing good and they have good boundaries and expectations and that, you know, their conflicts that arise are walked through, that I don't do that for myself, but like Rosso can't do that for myself. Right. And I can't expect my board chair to do that for me. Right. Especially again, in a position where you report to a volunteer. And so, you know, it's almost like, I'm like, can I ever go back? Like, can I ever go back to a place in which I'm an effective leader without, you know, somebody who is looking out for those things for me. And I know, you know, already Leading Edge has touched so many, you know, CEOs in our program. And I'm, you know, it'll be curious to see how many, you know, of those continue with their coaching, but has really instilled this as like, as a thing, because I don't think it was a thing. I mean, obviously you've been here for a long, you know, a lot longer doing this coaching, but it was never something in my path to this role and beyond that anyone was like, you know, Michelle, you should, except for my husband. I'll take that back. Before doing this program, my husband was like, I love talking to you about this stuff, Michelle. happy to keep talking to you about this, but you probably should find a coach to work with. And I was like, and he kept sending me men. And I was like, yeah, I'm sure they seem great. Like, happy to, maybe. And then I found this program. I was like, oh, they'll give me a coach. And then I don't have to do too much work to find one. And I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that later, but I kind of want to go into, you know, the sort of more global trends that you've seen, right? You've been doing this for a long time. I mean, both how is the Jewish community changing, but how are the people who are taking on these roles changing? How is the philosophy around leadership changing? What trends are you kind of seeing? You know, did you just used to work with men and now it's a mixture? Just the one woman that was actually in a position like this? I just have to hear your perspective on, you know, how things have changed since you started doing this work.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I think organizational work is changing so rapidly. And I probably work, I guess, half and half with professionals and also with lay leaders. Mm. So I'll first speak to lay leaders. I think lay leaders care deeply and take their roles unbelievably to heart. And they really want to do a good job. And there's the whole background of the baton. So here's my baton story. Is you come in as a lay leader, let's say as the chair of a synagogue board, you're handed this baton for 2 years. And in those 2 years, there's things you really want to accomplish. There's things that you've watched that you're like, here's part of what I want to do. And you try to set that up. You work with the board, you work with your professional team. And 2 years later, you hand your baton to someone else. And the professionals are the ones who are there along the ride for the changing relationships with the board leadership. And that's sometimes hard because you could have one board member who's, you know, this is their focus. Here's, you know, then another board member. So I feel that professionals, certainly in the Jewish community who are on the executive level, have to be very flexible in working with their leadership because their leadership come in with some different ideas. And I think that's one of the joys and one of the oys of working with, you know, with a partner. And I believe in true partnership with, you know, with a professional and a lay leader to have a shared vision. And hopefully that shared vision is never really changes, but it's some of the things under that shared vision that have different priorities depending on who the lay leader is. Right. So I am finding lay leaders still continue to care passionately, and they really want to know how to support their professional team once that's brought to their attention. Some of them don't realize like how hard they work. And one of the things that I work with people on is like, let's put yourself in and see what they're doing and how, you know, where are your offers to help and how are you, as you said, expressing gratitude. For professionals themselves, I feel that the work of running a nonprofit is truly overwhelming. I think right now there is, most executives and most Jewish professionals are doing 2 to 3 jobs at once.
Right.
There's an incredible staff shortage. I think people have left the field in the last few years, even pre-COVID, but certainly during COVID, because things just got really hard. And I think now people are also looking to lead from their values. You know, we talk, you know, I've done a whole conversation series around Midot. You know, and I try to work with people. I coach is like, where are you, you know, from where are your values? I mean, coming from a place of wisdom, coming from a place of integrity, coming from a place of compassion. Where does that come into your leadership? And I think in the past, people didn't always take the time to think about that. And I think that's something that people are leaning into more now, because I think a lot of people really want meaning out of their work. People don't come in to work in the Jewish community really for the money, right? They come in for other things and making sure that they are able to lean into and have time to lead from that area, I think is very important. I think it's hard. I think people really want to lead from a place of generosity, not scarcity. And with limited resources, it becomes this real polarity of how do you continue to lead from a place of generosity when there's limited resources, limited money, limited people? So how to keep helping people reset to see where the opportunities are, I think is something that I'm seeing a lot of.
Is there a lot of, and so I'll back up from my thought, my head, but there's, you know, I spoke with Jamie Allen Black, who I had just released an interview from 2019. She was a CEO for Jewish Women's Philanthropy. And even in our conversation, of New York. And even in our conversation, she kind of alluded to, you know, I'm working 70-hour weeks. I'm accomplishing this. I'm accomplishing that. And yet, you know, my relationships are, you know, not so great, right? In terms of the ability both for the professional to say no, right? And to slow down. So there's a quote that I actually have, not on my wall, but the preschool watch. I was a director for a number of years, and it was a number of months. And it was overwhelming, right? I was doing both executive director and preschool director, and I had a wonderful assistant director working with me, but it's a lot of work, right? And so I printed out this quote that was something along the lines of, you know, nature doesn't rush, yet everything gets done. And this idea that, you know, you just do what you got to do every day, and then that's enough, right? That feeling that not only is this enough, but also no, right? Hey guys, I really want to do this event around our cookbook, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that. How about we wait until next, you know, program year? You know, the idea is not going to go away. The community is not going to go away. But looking at what's on our plate for our staff, the prioritization, let's just not do that, right? And it's a lot easier to say at the beginning than it is to say when they've already halfway planned it, it's on the calendar, to be like, oh my gosh, this is so overwhelming. And so I wonder how you kind of coach people in which they're, you know, coming from that place where they're working 70-hour days, or, you know, that they really want to get all that work done. And sometimes, especially when you talk about lay relationships, it doesn't actually matter how much work you do, right? Like you can work your tail off, and you don't have good relationships in which people, you know, feel seen and feel heard and feel included. Doesn't matter what great things you think you've accomplished, because no one can appreciate that if it's not coming from a place of collaboration.
Right. So you shared your quote. One of the quotes that I think about is, you can do anything, you just can't do everything.
That's on my LinkedIn.
That one. Awesome. And so I remind people of that all the time. But one of the things that I talk a lot about, especially with younger professionals, is it's all about the relationship. Mm-hmm. So if you take time from the beginning to invest in relationships, for you as an executive director, Michelle, you invest in relationships with your staff, with your membership, with your lay leadership, with the rabbi, with, you know, but the more you put in and make deposits into those relationships and really deepen them and show up in and to a way where you gain trust. And it's okay then to ask for help. You know, I think a lot of people don't ask for help in a way that they really can. And I also think it's very much up to the top leadership to set the tone, to say, we don't have to do everything. Preschool, pick two things, not five.
Right.
And let's do the, and give people that permission. Because some people are just waiting for the permission to not have to do all those things. They think they have to keep doing. But I think it's very much having a trusting relationship that you could say to someone like, let's talk about this because this isn't working.
Right.
You know, you can be, let's talk about what success looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, and how we're going to measure that. And it's not always how much, but it's, you know, impact.
Right.
You know, I have this great story I share is I was asked to help consult on a strategic planning process for an organization. And I was the professional. And so they told me, here's the person who's going to, you know, chair this process. I didn't know them. So I called them up and I said, okay, let's get together before, you know, we get the committee going. And we met for coffee and we probably spent an hour and a half together and we walked out and this woman said to me, oh, wait a minute. We didn't talk about the strategic planning process. And I was like, oh yeah. Okay. Let's do that next.
Right.
Because my goal was just to start to create a relationship to find out how did she work best? Who's her family? Where's she from? Why did she choose to do this? You know, what's her investment? Like, I wanted to know everything. And then it was easy to move to the process. Because we already established the relationship. So
yeah, it's really, really important. Yeah. So if somebody did want to get a coach and they weren't as, you know, I mean, everyone should do Leading Edges, Leading Executives program, but that's just my own my own bias. But, you know, maybe you don't feel like you have time for that, whatever it is. You know, when somebody hears this conversation is like, wow, that sounds really wonderful and supportive. I'd love to find a coach. How would they go about doing that? As opposed to just listening to their husband and tell them who they should,
they should use
as a coach.
Right. I mean, one thing I have to say about coaching is I feel that it's becoming more and more the norm with new executives. And I always encourage people when they get come into that position to make that a part of their contract, that they get coached for the first year. Because I think anyone needs that consistent, you know, voice along the way with them, that consistent consultant, that consistent coach. I always say to people, word of mouth, ask people. A lot of different professional associations will have a list of coaches. I always suggest you go with a certified coach, someone who's been through the program, because there's lots of people who could put a shingle outside their door and say, I'm a coach. Not really going through the correct training for that. Lots of organizations, Leading Edge has a whole list of coaches.
Okay.
ICF is called, that's the International Coaching Federation. They have a list of certified coaches. So a lot of it, I mean, I've never advertised. I don't have a website. And it's just personal referrals, which I love, because then it's all about the relationships that I'm able to create. But I would turn to, like, I know, like, the JCCA, they have a list of coaches. So most professional, you know, national organizations have lists of coaches that they could refer people to.
Yeah.
And then I would ask people for referrals.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Now, we've been talking about executives. At what point in one's career should somebody think about having a coach, right? Is it when you're at a director level? Is it when you start to supervise other people? I can't assume that it's just like, oh, now you're a CEO and executive director, you know, get some support. You were talking about some people that you're working with that are kind of in a pipeline to that, which, like, I wanted to be in a pipeline. No one let me be in a pipeline, but I had to drink my own trench to get it through. But it's fantastic. That's the way, you know, it should be in terms of, you know, it shouldn't have to be that you have to go out to go up, regardless of where you're at. And so, so when should somebody start, you know, looking to this kind of support?
Right. I think first of all, it depends on the organization you're in. Some organizations have coaching as part of their culture, right? Someone comes in, they get onboarding, they have a coach for a few months. You know, when you're in a transition period, if you're going from one professional experience position to a next, it's like, let's give you a coach for the first 6 months, someone who's, you know, on that journey with you. I also feel when you're certainly becoming the executive, and it's lonely there, as we talked about, it's a great time to have a coach. I think organizations like Leading Edge have done great transformational work in the Jewish, you know, community to say, this is important. Culture is important. The, you know, the professional experience is important. Here's what we're hearing. I think for some people, when it's just like, I need some help, right? I need to have someone help me think these things through in a whole different way is a time when they could say, and I need it from someone outside my organization.
Right.
That's when it's like, maybe I need a coach now. But I think it's at those moments of transition and transformation of an organization.
I have never, ever thought about it that way. Because to me, I'm like, you know, FSAs and, you know, commuter benefits and staff lunches and all these things in terms of the culture you're creating that are indicative of staff happiness and satisfaction within their work life. I never thought about coaching as something that could be part of the culture. I have staff retreats and people that come in to talk about a specific thing or work with us on a specific thing together as a group. But, you know, I'm literally going to hang up and walk over to my directors and be like, do you want a coach? Like, are you sure? I'd love to get you one. How does that sound? And, you know, and then it's the process of then going to my board and being like, a coach would cost this much money. I'd like to get it for, you know, all of our director level people. You know, but at the same time, you know, I have a cantor who she's absolutely fabulous, but she doesn't supervise anybody. She doesn't sort of deal with any of the politics that we all get to deal with, right? She doesn't deal with budget. She's kind of does her awesome program and services stuff. So that's not the person that kind of comes to mind mostly that I'm like, you know, let's get you a professional coach. But people that, you know, are, you know, supervising programs, supervising staff, you know, juggling a lot, either, you know, by design or by personal preference. But wow, a culture of coaching. I got to take my Great Mondays book and write in that one and write in it. Add to culture, right? I mean, because you're talking a lot about articulating purpose and values. And, you know, I was using that for my next staff retreat to do it specifically for our staff internally, not for necessarily the organization, to say, what is our staff culture, right? We can create a culture within the community in which if somebody comes to an event, they're going to feel XYZ thing. But what does a day-to-day working operational culture here look like?
And that all comes from the top. That all comes from the top, right? You know, so, you know, when you talk about even your cantor, for instance, and just to use that position as an example, perhaps you're seeing a cantor who has this great skill set and does this, but wow, their leadership presence, like how do they feel when they walk into a room? How do they make others feel? Like that might be maybe a missing link for anyone, one of a director, you know, someone on the clergy. Like that's something in particular, like as their supervisor, you could say, here's an area I would love for you to focus in on is your leadership presence. Or you know someone who's one of your directors who's just having challenges making decisions, right? So then you say, here's something that I would love to have you work with someone for 2 months. Let's get you 4 sessions with someone. Let's, you know, here's, you know, knowing what the specific goals are. You know, so there's lots of ways to say, how do you bring coaching in?
Right.
You know, it could be for something that's very specific, or it could be for someone who, like the exec, who needs that person.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so great. And it was interesting because one of the things in the Leading Edge program, you know, Morty came in, who's their CEO, and like was just kind of talking flippantly about culture. And I'm like, ooh, culture, like tell me more. And I wasn't really actually part of the program, but I really wanted to dive into that in terms of same thing with my leadership philosophy, right? There's clearly a culture here. Like that's, there's no doubt about that. But, you know, what is that culture? What are those mantras? What is that behavior? How do I get those resources to name with my staff? What are our behaviors, our cues? You know, I don't do birthdays. Only because it's annoying to me. Like everyone has a birthday. I got 12 staff members. That's excellent. But taking the time to pass around a card for everyone to say a happy birthday, right? You know, is not part of sort of what I can think of as good use of my time in creating a culture, right? Knowing that it's somebody's birthday and saying happy birthday or saying in the meeting, you know, oh, and it was blah, blah, blah's birthday today. What did you do? Right. You know, whereas some other leaders might show up in which everyone gets balloons and flowers every single time that it's their birthday. And so much of that culture creating is coming from this position that it's trying to figure out what naming your culture and then what is good and what is bad and what we want to change and what we don't want to change is, you know, is hard work that you can also just kind of ignore that I'm sure a coach, you know, would be very helpful in trying to pull that and draw that out from a removed place.
Right. Right. Because just for you saying that, I would say, okay, so the birthday thing isn't your gig, but maybe someone on your team, like that's totally their gig.
Right.
So to me, it's like you give the work to the people, right?
Right.
You can't hold it all. It's like you say, who wants to be the birthday king or queen this year?
Right.
You know, and like, and you could switch it off and say,
there you go.
You're in charge of birthdays this year.
Yeah? See, and problem solved, right?
Problem solved.
Perfect. Right. So wonderful. So as we begin to wrap up, I just would love to hear any words of advice. I mean, I'm sure you have a lot all of the time. I mean, I know that you have a lot all the time for the individual people that you work with, but for people who happen to listen to this podcast, whether they're just starting mid-level, you know, on their not out, but sunsetting their professional career, or people who are considering becoming coaches. Yeah, you know, what advice do you have for professionals in the field?
Wow. I try to really always lean in and lead with kindness and compassion and never as, and from a place of goodwill. So if people could somehow bring that mindset of everyone's here from a place of goodwill and let's figure this out. For younger professionals, I really try to talk to them about leading with curiosity, not certainty, so that they really are learning every step along the way. And like one of my golden rules for all professionals, but particularly for young professionals, as they're trying to figure things out, is just do what you say you're going to do, right? If you're making a promise, if you're making a commitment, just do it. because then people will want to be engaged with you. They want to be in a relationship with you because here's someone who's delivering on a promise.
Right.
I think, and I know that's hard. So therefore you have to be careful what you promise. Right.
I feel like sometimes that we alluded to this before, and I'll let you finish as well, but it's a double-edged sword between doing work and having the good relationships, right? So I think something that's plagued the Jewish community for a long time that I have noticed is the good relationship person that can't do or doesn't want to do any work. And so everyone thinks they're so great, and yes, your staff under them are like, oh, like nothing is getting done. They're not doing anything. It's so annoying, but nobody will listen to us because everyone thinks they're so great. Right. And then from the perspective of myself, who's always been that, you know, behind the scenes, you know, I'll go hang out with the people who are in the catering company and, you know, back of the house people, you know, the stage lighting and all that. But that's, you know, that's the ethos that we run on, right? That, you know, you produce really good work, you get stuff done, stuff looks awesome, and therefore everyone should love you. And that's not also the other, you know, side of the equation. That's not helpful and conducive either. And so, you know, it seems like the people that you're working with, you're like, find that balance. Like if you're, cause I keep every single problem that I, or a problem, every single, every problem too, but every single promise that I make, I keep, right? Relationships on the other hand, somewhere to work on, right? And so if you have the person that is really, you know, excellent at those relationships, but isn't able to get work done, it's a really challenging balance.
Yes, it is. It is. And I think as leaders, it's our responsibility to point out some of those blind spots. Mm-hmm. Like some of those people don't realize maybe that they're not delivering because they're so busy keeping the relationships going.
Right.
And so I think the conversations are also the relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think people have to, leaders especially, have to get in front of themselves with the conversations and not be afraid to have them.
Right.
And I think that's just one of the ongoing challenges of leadership in all communities, you know, not just in the Jewish community, is being able to have conversations in a way that you could really say what's needed in a way that people can hear it. And that's not just one conversation. Those are the ongoing conversations. You know, and just being able to name what the challenges are and what the situation is. I think so many people shrink back from having any conversation that might seem like a confrontational one. Mm-hmm. But if you learn the skills of how to have them, I think people really appreciate it.
Yeah. I think so too, but those are not necessarily easy skills to have.
But it's also, any of this is easy.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, it's people do have short memories. Mm-hmm. You know, as I mentioned before, I had to take over the preschool for a number of months and it was still in the midst of COVID. And, you know, preschool parents are not the easiest and you have to make decisions and stick with them. And I just always knew that if we can have these difficult conversation and let you have your space and have your emotions and the, you know, see the 20 layers behind what the words that are coming out of your mouth to be like, okay, you're really hurting. You're really scared. This is really crazy. And you don't feel like you have control over a really potentially in your mind, deadly situation with your children. Right. I mean, all those layers of emotion,
like every emotion, every fear is there.
Yeah. Right. But now, you know, almost a year later or so, you know, hey, how are you in the hallway? And, you know, oh, they're growing so much. It's so great to see you guys, you know, and it just, people have short memories for conflict. And I think that, you know, the challenge when you're in the conflict situation that you're just like, oh, it's going to last forever and everyone's going to hate me all the time. And this is when I have to get out of here because there's no way that we're going to be able to get through this. And then you do, and you're like, oh, okay, maybe that's not so bad. We're through it. We're, you know, moving on with our lives and everything is fine. But that's, conflict. Oof, we have a whole other podcast on that, huh?
you could have a whole series of podcasts.
All right. Awesome. So any other advice that that you had lingering in your mind that you would want to share?
The only other advice I would say is like, it's okay to fail sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And so the last question that I have that I'm adding new for this relaunch, other guests, who is out there that you think, who do you know that we should know that you think would be interesting to talk to in providing you know, guidance, whether it's somebody in a particular CEO role or, you know, another coach or consultant that you think would be interesting for professionals in the Jewish community to know?
You know what? I'm going to think about that.
Oh, good.
I think that there's a bunch of people who I could, and I will certainly share those with you. I always like to get permission from people before I suggest
Excellent.
Them.
See, because I didn't do my homework in giving you what the questions were going to be. So right. had I done That's that, okay. you would be prepared.
Right. That's okay. I will follow through on that one with you.
Excellent. We'll go ahead and post that. Well, thank you so much, Beth. I just am so, so, so grateful for your presence in my life these last few months. And just so excited to be relaunching this program and having this conversation with you about being a coach, about the things you've seen, about, you know, the importance of really support in, you know, not just, as you said, not just these, you know, executive roles, but also anytime that somebody is really, you know, struggling and feeling lonely and feeling put out and they don't have the skills to do whatever is in front of you, you know, having a coach to help, you know, hold that mirror up for you and help you through that. In a way that's not, you know, psychoanalyzing your particular traumatic yeah. experience from your childhood. Right. Wonderful, Beth. Any closing comments from anything that we've talked about today?
I just want to say what a pleasure it's been working with you, Michelle. As you've navigated what's you know, some really sensitive areas of running a synagogue. That it's a synagogue is an emotional place.
Yes,
everyone wears their hearts, you know, right on their sleeves. So I it's just been really fun being a part of that with you. And I see this as a huge success, this relaunch.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And I said in my intro of the release, one of the things that you kind of helped me get to was, you know, when I first started this podcast, it was, you know, my husband had a job at a camp. He was constantly away recruiting. We didn't have kids. I had a dog, but that was fine. We just moved to the East Coast. I was working in the city. And I kind of had the time, right? So I'm like, okay, I'm going to learn everything about podcasting because that's just who I am. And I'm going to do all the right things and have this. Mm-hmm. And I liked this part and really craft and, you know, an excellent thing. And so in my mind, I'm like, well, if I'm going to relaunch it, I have so much work and I have to do this and I have to do that. And I have to make it all perfect. And you're like, but you like these conversations. Like, how can you make it work in your life now as an executive director with two children sitting on a board and this and this and this, right? That it's okay if it just like kind of conversations get released when they do. And it's okay if it's live so that there actually isn't any editing and maybe you post a little less and, you know, but you make it work for you in doing yeah. something you love. And so I've always enjoyed having some extracurricular activities that are outside of my job, in which, you know, no, not that nobody can tell me what to do, because that's silly, but, you know, it's fun and yeah, good. And like, awesome. That's, yeah. you know, those are things that, you know, I love doing that I can just kind of hold on to while I navigate the roller coaster that is exactly. work, you know,
work and life
and all that. Thankfully life is, you know, is really good, but, you know, also finding the, I'll give my own advice in here, right? Finding those things that, and, you know, we talk a lot about exercise and self-care, and self-care doesn't have to mean going to yoga or getting a pedicure or, you know, right. whatever that is, that this could be self-care, you know, in terms of finding something that just brings you joy and lifts you up in a different way. So, so thank you so much for
thank
encouraging
you.
This. And, I'm like, everyone has your email address, email Beth, thank her for getting me to start this again. And obviously, you know, her email's on the screen. I'll share it in the show notes. For anybody that wants to reach out to Beth, whether it's, you know, advice for a different coach or to start a coaching yeah. relationship with her. I don't know how full your plate is or isn't. I'll let you feel that as you will. But so grateful that there was, you know, one day that somebody said to you, hey, have you thought about being a coach? You know, that might be really good fit for you. Sounds like a wonderful journey that you've been on. That's also very fulfilling yeah. for you, which is
yeah.
great.
And I'm always happy to talk to people who are thinking about it.
That's awesome.
It Beth. Is.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Michelle. Bye.
Like this episode? Have a comment or a great suggestion for our next interview? Contact us through our website at itswhoyouknowthepodcast.com or on the It's Who You Know Facebook page. As always, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast so that others can find us. It's Who You Know, the podcast.